It is Friday, November 13th, 2015. On today's show, Canada's badass defense minister, a new way to look at the flu vaccine, and an Alberta judge who is just an ass. Happy Friday the 13th, everyone. The Pulse starts now.
From downtown London, The Pulse with Devin Peacock is on the air.
I work for a radio station, 980 on the AM dial.
Your city, your stories, your home. Now, here's your host, Devin Peacock.
Hope your day is going along nicely. You've got a lot on the show today, lots to get to before the half hour is out. We'll talk about the flu shot, but in a, I think, a completely different way. If you're on the fence about the flu vaccine, well, what if I told you there's some new research that suggests it could help prevent other diseases later in life? We will talk to a researcher from Hamilton who's looked into this, and of course we'll have the Friday faux pas. We'll count down to clear the three worst people in the world this week later on in the program. Up first, though, can we stop calling our defense minister a badass? It was a neat quirk in the immediate aftermath of Harjit Sajjan's appointment as Canada's new defense minister, but at this point, it's getting a little tired. CBC had a headline on their website early this morning that read, Canada's badass defense minister says, and then on and on. Enough. If Canadians want to call him a badass, fill your boots. But I think the time has come and gone for the media to continue to refer to him as a mad badass. It's a weird hang-up that we in the media sometimes get onto. CBC actually had an interesting story. He had come out and said that Canada must contribute to the defeat of ISIS, but rejected the idea that Canadians should be afraid of ISIS. So CBC got an exclusive interview with Sajjan on this. He said in that interview that the government is in discussions over what role Canada will play in the fight against ISIS, but that there was no date yet for withdrawing Canada's fighter jets from the coalition, which, of course, was a major campaign issue. Asked whether Canadian flights might continue to the end of the current commitment in March 2016, he said Canada is in discussions with its allies. Now, there's some newsworthy stuff there. The fact we don't yet know the timeline for a stated goal of the Liberal government, which, again, was to pull Canada's fighter jets from the bombing mission, but also the change in tone, that we should not fear ISIS. That's a very different tone from the previous government and a notable one. But could you find that on their website? No. All you could find was a clip from The National and this exchange between reporter Susan Ormiston and Harjit Sajjan.
I'm going to show you this because you've seen this. I mean, you're being called badass, a badass defense minister on Twitter. What do you think of that?
I actually chuckled. I didn't realize until I went home for the weekend to be with my family and my constituents. Then I actually saw. I was really shocked at the interest in me. Because I was, when I got the job, like, a big responsibility. I can't mess this up. I wanted to, so I was so focused on the job.
Mr. Shirley, this is one question you can answer me directly. Are you a badass?
No. I would say my kids, my daughter can just say something to me and almost put me to tears.
Great, hard-hitting work. Asking Harjit Sajjan about Canada's role in the fight against ISIS?
That's good.
But asking him about what you think about being called a badass?
That's bad.
Asking Harjit Sajjan when the government's going to follow through on a commitment it made during the election?
That's good.
But pressing him on whether or not he's actually a badass?
That's bad.
Picking up on a notable change in tone from the previous government in terms of fear?
That's good.
But continuing to describe him as a badass when you're in the media?
Ooh, that's bad.
So let's just stop. All right, everyone? Stop. Because from now on, if you are in the media and you seriously still call our new defense minister a badass, well, in the words of Oscar Leroy,
you're a jackass.
By the way, since I'm getting things off my chest right now, Let's also maybe, just maybe, stop making fun of Justin Trudeau because he tends to hug people a lot. Seems to me the same people who made fun of Stephen Harper for shaking his kids' hands before school now love that Justin Trudeau is a hugger. And the same people who defended Stephen Harper when jokes were made at his expense because he shook his kids' hands are now making fun of Justin Trudeau because he's a hugger. Same story in reverse. I've said my piece. I do want to keep with the theme of our Canadian forces, though, and do something a bit more serious. I want to pick up on something I was talking about earlier in the week, which is support for our veterans has to be more than just a few days a year. And I want to focus on PTSD. Because, and here's the flip side to CBC. They had a fantastic story earlier this week that talked about some service dogs and how they are being used to help soldiers who have PTSD. So they featured the story of Chad Mirren. He's from Hamilton. Did an 8-month tour in Afghanistan back in May, starting in May of 2010. He was stationed at one of the most frequently attacked outposts in Kandahar. The Taliban attacked almost daily with gunfire and rockets. The worst part, apparently, was the constant threat of IEDs. It wasn't when they were being attacked, it's when they had to go out. So in this story, he talked about it just started to wear you down after a time. And how could it not? When you go out in public and you're constantly just at, you know, unease. He witnessed his section commander who lost his leg when he was hit with an IED. His most difficult day was when he had to transport the remains of one of his fellow soldiers who was killed by another IED. So that all set the stage for his PTSD when he came home, and he has had difficulty adjusting for 5 years. Had lots of therapy, numerous medications, but the wonderful part of this story is how his service dog, Norman, has helped him. So here is Chad Mirren talking about how he felt when he returned home and how his service dog, Norman, has helped him.
I was just angry all the time after that. I started drinking quite a bit. Anytime I was in a bar, I always wanted to fight other people. Just kind of stopped going out altogether and just kind of locked myself in my apartment. Basically, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Ended up on, I think, 5 different medications. 2 for sleeping, 1 for staying awake during the day, 1 for depression, and 1 for anger. So my psychologist, she said, I've heard about this group of people who are doing service dogs for veterans. Do you think you'd be interested in this? I was really willing to try anything at that point. That's when things started slowly improving. Obviously, with a dog, you have to go out. You have to take him out for bathroom breaks, for walks. That was the starting point for me.
The group that's doing this is National Service Dogs. They're based in Cambridge. Danielle Forbes is their executive director, says they breed and train service dogs. Now, they're a charity, so what they do is they provide the dogs for free, but the veterans must pay for the care of the animal themselves. For some veterans, that's an issue. Forbes' organization and other nonprofits like hers are doing what they can. The federal government covers dog care expenses for former soldiers with physical disabilities, but the key difference here is not for PTSD. Here is Mirren talking about how his service dog really has helped him.
One of the big things was with crowds, lots of people being around, you just start getting tense and it just starts compounding. When you're out in public and you need some space, you can command the dog to block, and that'll force people to walk around you and give you space that you need. So there were times when I would have flashbacks. I would go back to Afghanistan. one of the cues is you just straight up tell him to nudge you, and he'll come up and headbutt you, kind of snap you out of wherever you are.
It's fantastic. It's wonderful what this program is. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention. Hopefully it gets more attention now. And hopefully it gets the kind of support that service dogs in other areas get for veterans. According to Veterans Affairs, they are currently recruiting up to 30 former soldiers with PTSD for a pilot project to help them better understand the short and long-term impact of a service dog, which is good. Government is going to cover dog care costs. It's possible the project's outcome could lead to widespread dog care coverage for all veterans who would qualify. The pilot project is expected to end in late 2017. Maybe further study is needed. I'd say there's already plenty of study that's done on the positive impact dogs have on people's psyche. Certainly we know how much of a benefit service dogs can be to people in many different ways. So if this is working, I would like to see it rolled out to as many veterans as it can who they think it will help. Because listening to him talk about just the impact the dog has on him and talking about how it's hard when the dog starts nudging you and nuzzling into you for a little cuddle or a pet, it's hard to be as angry as you were at that moment. It's something small. It's not the only way and only solution to helping soldiers with PTSD, but it could have an impact. So when we talk about supporting our veterans, this, I think, is a small way we can do it, and it can have maybe a big impact. I hope it's one indication that the federal government is serious when it says it wants to do more to help our veterans. I hope this is part of their plans. We need to pause. When we come back, we'll talk about the flu vaccine, but in a way I think we have not talked about before, talking about how the flu vaccine may help prevent other diseases in the future. You're listening to The Pulse with Devin Peacock on AM 980. Welcome back to the program, everyone. It is flu season, the time of year when people get their flu shot. We've looked at the flu shot itself on the show recently, how it's concocted, why it isn't always as effective as you would like it to be. Still, I think it's worthwhile to get. I would rather have it than not have it. I want to talk about the flu vaccine for the next little while, but in a completely different way. New research done by Canadians suggests getting vaccinated regularly can now protect us from other diseases later. Don Bowdish is a professor at McMaster University, holds a Canada Research Chair on Aging and Immunity. She joins us now to discuss this further. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, how is it that you come to even research this? Because this is an interesting, you know, tangent, I guess maybe you could put it, to the flu vaccine. Is this something you went looking for, you thought might be the case, or did you almost find it by accident?
It dawned on us slowly, actually, to be honest. We were trying to understand why pneumonia affects older adults so much more than it does younger people. And one of the surprising findings we made in our mouse model, because we have old mice in the lab and we do these studies on them, was that they would have a really big inflammatory response after they got an infection, and that inflammation just didn't seem to go away. And we knew that in humans, having a buildup of this sort of low-grade chronic inflammation was linked to chronic inflammatory diseases such as dementia, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. And we started digging through the literature, and actually there's a huge body of data describing how when older adults get a pneumonia, which could come after, you know, an influenza, or it could come independent of influenza, they actually, their health outcomes are very, very poor. So, in fact, some American studies say that if two middle-aged people go to the hospital, for whatever reason a middle-aged person might go to the hospital, if one of them acquires a pneumonia, they have an increased rate of dying in the next 2 years, and they'll cost the healthcare system an additional $15,000. And that's not to do with costs for the original pneumonia, which we can treat, but it's because other chronic health issues come up. And so basically what we're trying to do in the lab right now is trying to stop this chronic inflammation to protect older adults, not just from the pneumonia, but also from all the harm that comes after the pneumonia.
So is it maybe because, I mean, one of the criticisms against the flu vaccine is it's guesswork. They're creating the vaccine in February. Maybe the strain mm-hmm. changes by the time sure. you get to flu season now. But as that maybe stays in your body, as it changes from year to year, maybe is that what actually ends up being part of the protection here, because you have the flu vaccine in many different facets that is, I guess, maybe traces in your body still to some degree that helps
sure.
with that protection?
That's actually a great way of putting it. So we really saw an example of this when we had the H1N1 year in 2008, 2009. We really thought older adults, people in nursing homes, the elderly would be at a high risk of dying from this because it seemed like a really nasty strain. And much to everyone's surprise, they were protected. And so people were studying this and trying to figure out why, and it looks like there was a strain that really resembled it 60-plus years ago that was circulating. So they actually were exposed when they were young and they were healthy and their immune systems could deal with it, but they kept the natural immunity, the antibodies, for 60-plus years, and that protected them in old age. So personally, for me, one of the reasons I get vaccinated every year is I'm building up my immunity. So in years that, you know, they don't quite get the strain right, or for whatever reason I can't be protected, I'll have this bank of antibodies, this bank of immunity that'll protect me in old age. And so I think even young adults should think about making flu vaccination part of their normal healthcare routine, because as they get older, they're going to be grateful for having all that protection.
Are there some diseases this may help protect against more than others?
Well, we certainly, the data is not crystal clear yet. I mean, there's certainly very strong data suggesting you don't ever want to get a bacterial pneumonia, which often comes after influenza. Oftentimes it's not the flu that sends you to the hospital, it's the pneumonia that follows it. You really don't want to get that after you're about 50 years old, because the rate of developing chronic inflammatory diseases like cardiovascular disease, dementia, and type 2 diabetes is a lot higher. But one of the things we're hoping to start doing in the lab is trying to figure out if certain people are a little bit more predisposed to go one way or the other to get some of these chronic diseases as opposed to others. And then, you know, we can help try to develop strategies to protect them, because unfortunately we can treat pneumonia, we can make sure everyone gets out of the hospital safe, but what we can't treat are some of those other chronic inflammatory diseases.
Do you think this could help sway people to maybe get the flu shot?
I certainly think so. I mean, when I think about how I want to spend my golden years, or if I think about the older adults who I care deeply for, you know, parents and grandparents, I certainly am more afraid of diseases like dementia than I am of infectious disease, and I'm an infectious disease researcher. So certainly I find this personally inspiring, and this is one of the reasons that in my family we always make sure the kids are vaccinated, because one of the major risk factors for older adults is exposure to young children. So children bring home infections and flus and bacterial pneumonia from school, and then unfortunately they may pass it on to a grandparent. So this is one of the reasons that I actually make sure that our whole family is vaccinated, just to protect the older adults who we care about.
Why do you think the flu shot is such a tough sell?
Well, there's a lot of distrust about vaccination, and it's upsetting, because although a lot of the distrust towards vaccination started by some really flawed studies that have been proven wrong all over the world many times over, there's still a lot of belief that that they may cause harm. And I think the other issue is the English language doesn't do us any favors. Most languages have two different words for the flu, which would be like a cold or, you know, a bit of illness that we might feel, and influenza, which is an extremely serious infection. So people don't understand that what they're protecting themselves for is an influenza infection and not the common cold or, you know, a more trivial infection. And so I think because they, you know, you may still get sick in cold and flu season with something other than influenza, they just don't see the connection about protecting themselves against the influenza virus.
Do you think this could go the other way? Is there something else that maybe helps with the flu that we don't expect, or with influenza?
Well, certainly. I mean, one of the terrible things about these chronic inflammatory conditions I've mentioned is that once you have them, you actually get more susceptible to bacterial pneumonia and pneumonias that come after an influenza infection. So one of the things you need to do is keep any chronic inflammatory conditions you have in check. So if you've got lung conditions like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you need to be really vigilant about the management. If you have asthma, you need to be really vigilant about your care. If you've got type 2 diabetes, you want to make sure that you're keeping those blood sugar levels nice and stable. And you basically want to manage those conditions as best you're able to keep yourself protected from these things. But unfortunately, we still need to make sure that we're all vaccinated. And one of the best things we can do is, because we know that vaccines stop working so well as we get older, we need to get our young adults and we need to get children vaccinated to protect older adults.
I would imagine the research will not stop here. What do you think this could lead to?
Well, what we're hoping, and one of the reasons we use our older mice, is that we'll be able to test some really novel and innovative strategies to break the cycle of chronic inflammation. So that's really going to be the major focus for the lab for the next little while, because we want to be able to, even if someone gets an influenza infection or a pneumonia, we want to see if we can break that cycle of inflammation and develop new drugs to bring to market to protect them. And to do that, we really have to understand the aging immune system, because it's a very different beast than the young, fully functional immune system. So we really have to tailor these studies to the aging host.
It's quite interesting. Dawn, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's Dawn Bowdish, a researcher and professor at McMaster University. We need to pause. When we come back, we will have more of The Pulse with Devin Peacock on AM 980. Time now for the Friday Faux Pas, where we look back at the funny, odd, and unusual items from the week gone by. We will start with something that broke on Twitter last night, in fact. David Hasselhoff, the Hoff, claimed he has officially changed his name to David Hoff. There is even a short video of him saying he changed his name.
I've been wanting to drop the hassle from my life for years. Now, I have made it official. David Hoff.
So he was holding up a, you know, an official that says, you know, name change, David Hoff. So Twitter blew up. People were all over Hasselhoff becoming the Hoff. Unfortunately, it is not true. One of his reps said, and I quote an excerpt from an ad campaign that launches in Australia this weekend, David is just having some fun, and more will be revealed in the next 24 hours. I don't know what he's doing. Let's just hope he doesn't eat another cheeseburger off the floor. That's all I ask. Speaking of Australia, there was a fantastic exchange on ABC last night. And by ABC, I mean the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Journalist Tony Jones interviewed former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd about advice he had for new Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. One of the first questions Jones asked Rudd is if he had any advice for dealing with China and India at the upcoming climate conference in Paris.
But I imagine one of the issues would have been how to deal with China, because in Copenhagen you famously came up against the intransigence of the Chinese delegation, whom you accused of fornicating with rodents, if I recall correctly.
Well, I'll leave the poetry to others.
That's not a rat. Now that's a rat. I do like how free-flowing the Aussies are, even their politicians. For example, when do you ever hear former Canadian Prime Ministers talking about the loony fringes in their party and the opposition party?
Just a few days ago, you warned Mr. Turnbull to watch out for the nut jobs of the lunar right in his own party. Were you referring to climate denial?
Oh, a bunch of nut jobs on the lunar right in his party. So, of course, I won't name them. I think they self-define themselves in the Australian political debate. But also, by the way, in that debate, I was asked about how Mr. Turnbull was performing. I balanced it by saying we in the Labor Party have our our serious problems with factional thugs coming out of elements of the trade union movement. In other words, every political leader has their challenges in forging the consensus necessary.
All right. Speaking of people who are a bit out there, Ted Cruz. Former U.S. presidential candidate Bob Dole was asked for his opinion earlier this week on the current crop of candidates running for president. As you will hear, he thinks there are a lot of great candidates, except for one, and it's not Donald Trump.
We need somebody with experience, and there are a lot of good candidates. I like nearly all of them.
That's political.
Thank you, sir.
Now, you might have missed it at the end because it was windy. He was not talking into the mic. He said, a lot of good candidates, and like nearly all of them, except for Cruz. And then he giggled, which it's fun to watch Bob Dole giggle. Bob Dole! If you watched SNL in the 90s, you'd get that. Former Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis is about to become the latest current or former athlete to come under the mistaken belief that he can rap and put out some music. A couple days ago, he previewed a song that he will supposedly be releasing next Wednesday, and it's terrible. I'm going to play about 50. He gave us 15 seconds. I'll play the 15 seconds for you. This is atrocious.
That's why men cry for women. That's why women. Can I slow down to honor a woman?
Mama, if you hear me, I'm sorry for the pain. And pass it to your love, I was in
the... Uh-huh. He started by saying, that's why men cry for women. If that 15 seconds is any indication, might want to rethink that. Of course, he will not, because as I said, many famous athletes have gone down this path. For example, here is 16 seconds of Kobe Bryant and his terrible song.
Flawless. Flawless. Come on.
The best, though, by far, is Shaquille O'Neal from 1993, humbly titled I'm Outstanding.
I said to myself, I can't let them down. So make way, I'm coming in for a landing. What's gonna stop me from being outstanding?
Wait for it. In his defense, he is one of the greatest NBA players of all time. There was an unusual story out of Florida recently. A deputy got into trouble for partying a little too hard before he attended a Mothers Against Drunk Driving Awards banquet. The deputy was slated to receive an award for making more than 100 DUI arrests. When Gulfport Police Chief Robert Vincent saw him staggering around outside the venue, told him he seemed too drunk to go inside. Here is Chief Robert Vincent describing their exchange.
Well, the first word out of his mouth when he saw me was dude. He said he was a deputy, and I asked if he would tell me his name, and he said he wasn't going to tell me his name. And I said, well, you probably don't want to be at a MAD awards banquet while you're intoxicated. You're too drunk to be going to a MAD conference, and you ignore that blatantly. That's just not right.
No one was hurt. Deputy was never accused of any crime, was later given a one-day suspension that included a written apology. Here is something you cannot make up. An elected official who announced funding cuts for public bathrooms might now be rethinking that decision after he was caught and ticketed for urinating in the street. Jackie Burns, the deputy leader of the South Lancashire Council in Scotland, was fined about $60 after police spotted him urinating in public. Burns said he was at a taxi stand in the town of Hamilton when nature happened to call. Earlier this year, he announced the need to close public toilets throughout the area, a move that many residents vehemently opposed. A community council-led petition to keep the public bathrooms around town open drew more than 3,000 signatures, with more than 70 businesses in favor of keeping them open. It did not happen. When asked if his experience has led him to change his mind, Burns said, depends. Generally speaking, internet trolls are terrible, terrible people. However, there is one who is fantastic. If you are not yet familiar with Ken M, I would recommend you Google him and look him up. Just Google Ken M. Unlike most trolls, he's not insulting or offensive. He's just very stupid on purpose. He will take what seems like an innocent article and turn it on his head. For example, Space.com once had an article about how an asteroid would narrowly miss Earth, to which Ken M. wrote in the content on the comments below, seems this lonely space meatball wanted to give Mother Earth a peck on the cheek. Now if only we could get rid of the meatballs in Washington. Oftentimes people respond to him not realizing he's being serious. Recently he called in to C-SPAN. He's expanding the way he messes around with people. Here he is calling in to talk about the SATs, but instead he keeps talking about STDs.
We're getting your take on changes to the SAT test, and we'll hear from Ken next in Ridgewood, New York, a parent. Hey, Ken, what's been your experience with the SAT?
Good morning. So my question is, honestly, do colleges still even care about SAT scores? Because last year our son took the test just one time, and he got 6 perfect scores, but he's still having trouble getting into a school.
He had 6 perfect scores.
Well, you got a 600 on the test, which is like 6 A pluses.
Okay, all right. And still having trouble. What schools did he apply to?
He applied to our local junior college and Harvard. And if you can't get into a school with a 600, why should students waste their time on the STD?
What do you think, what have been the reasons? Does he know why he was not accepted to those schools?
He's very subtle. I could go on and on about the guy. I personally think he's hilarious. He doesn't whack you over the head with what he does. Can slip by very quickly, as evidenced by this one other call we'll play right here. C-SPAN had a topic about financial planning. So he called in to say his parents were not planning for his financial future to his satisfaction.
Ken up next from Ridgewood, New York.
Hello, thanks for C-SPAN. So I'm calling from the over 35 group. I've always been of the opinion, but I'd be interested to know if there was a similar study about the financial literacy of the elderly. And the reason I ask is because I live with my parents, and I see firsthand that they've done pretty much nothing to plan for my future, despite my dad's pension and my mom's Social Security. They've had a really hard time saving. I don't know if that's the economy or the generational thing.
Right. Well, I think it's important to note a couple things.
And then they answered his question normally, but he's asking about why they're not planning for his future. I think he's great. We will end with a clip we played earlier this week, and that is Jeb Bush. This is a clip of Jeb Bush talking about how he would go back in time to kill baby Hitler. In case you missed it, some of the context was there was a magazine poll earlier this year asking the readers if they would go back to kill baby Hitler. Overwhelmingly, people said yes. From that, someone then emailed Jeb Bush asking his opinion on time travel and snuffing out baby Hitler. This is what Bush had to say.
I said if you could go back in time and kill baby Hitler, would you? I need to know.
And
hell yeah, I would.
Even if he was really cute.
No, look, you gotta step up, man. I mean, that would be key. Problem with going back in history and doing that is, as we know from the series, what was the name of the Michael Fox movies?
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. It could have a dangerous effect on everything else.
There's a lot to consider in this.
But I'd do it. I mean, okay. Hitler.
While Jeb Bush is traveling through time, maybe he could do us all a favor and kill baby Paul Bernardo as well. That is the Friday faux pas. We are about to do Worst Person in the World in a couple minutes. Before we do, though, how do we be doing Best Person in the World this week? Dale Hansen, a sportscaster out of Dallas for ABC's affiliate WFAA, would be on the list. On Wednesday, he dedicated a comment segment he has in his sportscast to harshly criticizing Cowboys defensive end Greg Hardy. Hansen did not appreciate it when Hardy changed his Twitter bio to imply he was innocent until proven guilty, which was a reference to the domestic violence incident he is said to have been involved in 2014. Here is Dale Hansen.
I was really hoping we'd be done with this Greg Hardy story by now. Thought I'd said just about all I needed to say about him, but he won't let it go, so I guess I won't either. Hardy says on his Twitter account, innocent until proven guilty. He has been found guilty. A North Carolina judge says he is. The NFL found him guilty, and he is certainly guilty in the court of public opinion. But Hardy is claiming he's innocent until proven guilty because a prosecutor drops the charges, saying he did so only because Hardy paid the woman he beat up not to testify. I will tell you this. If I'm ever accused of hitting a woman and I did not do it, and some prosecutor says I paid her to keep quiet and I didn't do that either, trust me on this. We will be back in court. We will be in a courtroom again. I would never allow a prosecutor to slander me like that if I didn't do it. Hardy would have us believe, and he told the NFL this, his former girlfriend Nicole Holder slipped and fell that night. That's how she got the bruises from her face to her feet. She walked into a wall, slipped into a bathtub, banged into the wall getting out, flipped herself onto a bed covered in guns, then grabbed her throat and squeezed real tight. Well, I guess we owe Greg Hardy an apology. Who doesn't think that happened?
That is well done. Again, that's Dale Hansen out of ABC in Dallas. We need to pause. When we come back, we'll count down to clear the three worst people in the world this week. You're listening to The Pulse with Devin Peacock on AM 980.
Apples $2.99 per 3-liter basket. Come join the fun and savings today through Sunday at Farm Boy, White Oaks, Masonville, and Beaverbrook.
It's a Farm Boy day, so shop the Farm Boy way.
It is Friday. It's the end of the week, and that means it's time to count down and declare this week's worst person in the world.
Number three.
The owner of the New Jersey Devils and Philadelphia 76ers is apologizing to two youth soccer teams after his helicopter landed on the field they were going to play, forcing the game's cancellation. Officials at Newark Prep School that lets Devils owner Josh Harris use its field as an apparent landing pad says a scheduling error was to blame. One of the parents had this to say: my son's under 13 youth soccer team was supposed to play a game last night, but as the two teams got ready to take the field, a helicopter dropped down from the sky and landed right in the middle of the field. A security detail emerged from the helicopter and informed the boys and their coaches that Josh Harris had instructed them to land on the field and wait for him to return from the game where the Devils were playing. The boys and their families waited in the cold until finally it became clear that he was running late, and no one knew when he might return to pick up his ride. Eventually, the coaches decided to call the boys' game, and everyone went home disappointed, frustrated, and annoyed. Harris has since apologized, says he understands the frustration of the soccer families, soccer players' families, because he also spent many hours watching his kids play sports, says it will not happen again.
Number two.
Months after a Charlottetown family asked Islanders to keep an eye on their money to help catch a thief, there's some good news to report. Back in July, the Saunders family was broken into, and 6-year-old Jackson Saunders' piggy bank was stolen. The piggy bank was not filled just with money. It had a lot of mementos in it. Bills gifted to him by relatives with names and dates scribbled on the money, tickets from trips and excursions with his family. He wanted to obviously keep those souvenirs. Linda Saunders posted the story to social media to alert the community there was a thief on the prowl, to keep an eye out for any unusual-looking money, but also to raise awareness in the hope that some of those treasures might find their way back home. Since then, the six-year-old has received hundreds of notes, coins, and cards from around the world. Jackson has now received mementos from as far away as the Middle East and Australia. Jackson has been making cards to deliver to people who he can and thank them. Saunders' family also plans to pay it forward with a donation to a charity related to the military or veterans. That's great, but who steals a piggy bank from a child's room?
Number one.
An Alberta federal court judge who once asked an alleged sexual assault victim why she could not keep her knees together has apologized and will undergo sensitivity training. Justice Robin Camp was placed under review by the Canadian Judicial Council on Monday after a complaint was made by three law professors who said his treatment of the female complainant was appalling and showed disregard for the law. The complaint refers to a trial that took place when Camp was still an Alberta provincial court judge, in which he acquitted a man of sexual assault that was alleged to have taken place on a 19-year-old homeless woman. During the trial, Camp asked the alleged victim, whom he mistakenly referred to as a defendant, things such as, "Why didn't you just sink your bottom down into the basin so he could not penetrate you?" and "Why couldn't you just keep your knees together?" According to a court transcript, he also said that sex and pain sometimes go together, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. He has, as I said, since apologized and will undergo sensitivity training. But to federal court justice, Camp, you are
the worst person in the world this week.
Have a great day. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk again in 70 hours.